It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Why? Because we've got two founders.
Wow.
Two founders today on the Renaissance
podcast. That's incredible. Podcast.
Hey, listen, and we're pumped. We want to welcome our listeners to the Nonprofit Renaissance. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for your comments, for your reviews. It's been incredible. My name's H. We've got Colin. Say what's up,
That's
Colin.
That's me. That's who I am.
And we've got founding fathers in the house today. It's a special episode.
They're Sounds
in
for a old. Trade. Both founders, both founders.
And we'll let you guys age Fonders. Yourselves, but we've got, you've heard them on the episode before, but the principal and founder of Verse Creative, which powers the Nonprofit Renaissance, Justin Price is in the house.
Justin, as a special, what's going on, man?
What's up, guys?
Special.
It's good to be back.
Good to be back.
Thanks for having me back in the hot seat.
By popular demand, I think, right?
I was getting some emails.
Yes.
Someone knocked on my door the other day.
My mom is definitely aggressive about that.
It was Bonnie. Yeah.
But also our special guest today, excited for you to hear from him, founder and leader and just Tampa OG, ladies and gentlemen. That's basically the title. But started Grace Family Church about 30 years ago and the founder of Dream Center Tampa. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Craig Altman.
All right. Good to be here. Wow. Yes. That's a heavy introduction.
Really drawn out.
Very drawn out. I was going to say mayor of Tampa, but can we legally say that?
I don't think so.
Have you ever thought of running for mayor?
No.
Come on.
No.
Have you We're gotten... not worried about legality on this podcast.
I'm so politically incorrect, it wouldn't work very well.
I'm just thinking about all the excerpts from the last like four sermons. That would He's
there
already
you go.
Disqualified.
I've just DQ'd.
I love it.
But hey, Pastor
Jesus
Greg...
would have been DQ'd, though, I think, too.
Oh, absolutely. Probably, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
But my I think he was.
That's kind of story. On a cross.
Yeah.
My favorite is when he says, any sermon where you go, I'm just being honest. I'm just being real here. This is Grace. This is Grace Family Church. That's when I know what's going to follow. That is so good. I seriously like smile from ear to ear.
Yeah. I had a football. Yeah. Like not one, a bad one, but I was talking about Abraham and Sarah. And I said, you know, 99, she's good as dead. He's good as dead. I said, you know, God promised, but it probably got hard to kind of go and do it. And they had no Viagra back then.
So
and,
good.
And people went, I had my phone blow up.
I said, that's the one we're keeping. I want that at every location.
It was so, I was dying laughing.
My wife talked to me later.
I was dying. Please don't listen to any of those naysayers because you're keeping your audience
there
engaged.
There you go. Oh, for sure. For sure.
Great way to open.
No, this is it. Let's cut to let's cut to our sponsors today. Viagra, brought to you by.
Brought to you by Abraham.
Yeah,
Abraham.
But Pastor Craig, you've been a legend here in Tampa. It's been amazing getting to serve with you, hear from you, be pastor led by you. Also started the Dream Center in Tampa, which we want to talk about. But give our listeners a little insight on where you come from, what you're up to in 30 years
born
and 30
seconds. Born and raised in Tampa and did not come from any Christian environment, man. My dad was married four times, never knew God, church, religion, Bible, nothing. Of course, you guys know, 19 years old, this pretty girl started telling me about Jesus, and I pretended like I was listening, but God had better plans. So I got saved in a pub, drinking beer.
There you go.
Yeah, that's how it started.
What kind of beer?
Well, I don't know. It was nine of them, I can tell you that. And then I heard a voice, and everyone said, you hear a lot of voices after nine beers. Anyway, yeah. So you never thought I'd be even a Christian, much less a pastor. So,
And then 30 years ago, Grace Family Church.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, at the time, I was a youth pastor for 12 years and just felt that, you know what, we need to go do this for adults. And had no idea where it'd be today, but we started a little strip center. They were doing Jesus jazzercise, and we had 80 people at our first service.
Nice.
And we just said if we could ever get up to 300 people, man, we would be like, make it big time. So.
And fast forward 30 years, and I think, you know, we've experienced.
Finally made the 300.
Finally crossed 300. Finally yes, we finally did that on staff. On staff. Because obviously God's blessed and you've led strong for multiple years, thousands of people, you know, several locations spread out throughout Tampa. And the impact and the life change that's happened is incredible. And we celebrate, we applaud you for your faithfulness in that. And what we wanted to also touch on today is Dream Center. How did that come about in the journey?
Wow. I'm trying to think timeline. I think it's probably 11 or 12 years ago. We were doing good, but I just, it was an unsettling in my heart. And one day I was reading the story, The Good Samaritan. You know, he walks down the road and he sees a guy in a ditch, and it says that the priest walked by and didn't do anything. Another guy walked by and didn't do anything. Then the Good Samaritan, of course, stopped and helped. And as I read the story, God said, you're the one that keeps walking by. Mm-hmm. What are you talking? He goes, there's areas of this town that are very under-resourced and kind of, we use the old term, inner city. And so I started driving around and saw this dilapidated old Boys and Girls Club in Ybor in a very pretty tough area of town. And, you know, it's just like voice, this is the place. And so we kind of, you know, started there. We pretty much had been abandoned. It wasn't even livable or occupied. And we worked with a Boys and Girls Club, and they weren't using it. So you can use it for free if you want to redo it. Well, it was $2 million later, but our congregation, and we just started really a program for kids, you know, and mentoring after-school program for kids and, you know, help them to get their education. Of course, Christ-centered, you know, they need a career path. You got to get educated first, right? You got to graduate. That was about 11 years ago, and it's still going strong today, and just seen some of the good generational things. Some of those kids we've actually seen go to college, had scholarships from the Dream Center to go to college. So it's been a good story, but I think in those areas, there's a mentality, you know, to have a hand out. And we just really want to give a hand up, not out, you know. And plus, they're testing you. How long are you going to be here? And so we've been there, still there, and we'll be there till Jesus comes back.
I love that.
Yeah.
Tell you, you know, obviously, you've led as a staple in the community and being involved in the community. I think you obviously being from here, you went to school here, you know, you've known of all the bars here from your past. So there's you can't avoid that, but you've continued that over the years, which has really been a key to your successful leadership and influence. Talk to our leaders about that, the importance of not just come see us, come to me, come here, but also being out there, being connected, community, whether it's some of it politics, whether it's just outreach or social services, whether it's sporting events or relational. What have you done? What are some tips on that end?
I mean, just I look at the New Testament church. It wasn't just inside the walls. You have to be outside. You got to be serving your community. Jesus said, I didn't come to be served, but to serve. And churches turned inward so fast. And that's the challenge in any church. How do we stay focused on the community? And the Dream Center really helped us to kind of refocus on, hey, there's a place that we're going to invest into that will never be reciprocated. It's not about, hey, we're going to do this, and it's just a mission. And every church has to be missional outside the walls, or it gets really stale. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, it's amazing. When we started the Dream Center, like, how are we going to fund it? How are we going to do it? God always provides when you are willing to reach out into your community. And, you know, at every level, you know, we're in many schools around, and we've adopted certain public schools doing just, you know, gifts, you know, serve them. They need a new teacher's lounge. We'll go in and help do that just to build a relationship with community. You know, they don't want to hear about Jesus. They want to, what are you going to do for us? And as we've done that, we've been able to gain influence in many of these schools. So it's been cool, the outreaches we've done. You know, we have something called Serve Saturday, where once a month we have opportunity to serve and connect with other ministries. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. They're already out there, some great outreach ministries. You know, in Tampa area, you have some children's homes. You got Metropolitan Ministries. You have Home for Unwed Mothers. You have the prison ministries. You know, and so we just try to partner with them and send our people out. And, you know, a new one that's actually evolved, New Life Warehouse, where they provide bedding and furniture for people. They don't get it. They take their kids away from them. So there's a lot of cool things that we can partner with, and our people want to get out there. I think people know they're called to do something.
Love it. Justin, obviously you sit on some boards, advise, you know, some nonprofits, you know, like the Dream Center and others. Tell us about kind of what you've seen, some of best practices in being present, being out there, and not just, you know, come and see, but maybe kind of go.
Well, I think that there's a lot of nonprofits that are they see themselves already out there. And so I think there's a lot of even churches who think what we're doing in this location is enough. This is it, and this is good. And I think there's a really cool inspiration we should grab from churches and from other nonprofits that are reaching out and extending beyond what they, is their sweet spot, what they're already doing and collaborating. And so I think there's a disconnect for so many weeks because they feel under-resourced. But I think what you said about the money, God's got the resources, and it's about stepping up and actually doing the reach.
Right.
He'll provide what you need. Right. If he's put the vision on your heart, you need to be obedient, is what I'm hearing you say more than anything. And I think a lot of nonprofits need to hear that. They're like, why are we stuck? We're doing the same thing with the same budgets. And, I find myself on boards oftentimes being the one trying to push and trying to say, we can't be 10 years behind where our audience is. We've got to make some massive changes, and there's fear with that.
There is.
So let's keep our money in the bank. Let's not stretch ourselves too thin. Let's play it safe, because what we're doing is already dangerous, right? Like, as a nonprofit, we're already trying to do things that are uncomfortable and stretch us. Yeah. And so when it comes to the finances and when it comes to reaching out beyond our walls and what is in our sweet spot, we oftentimes just leave that to somebody else. But I think you guys have set the example. I mean, the fruit of that has been that in a city that is growing and is very difficult to grab new people, right? In a culture where there is 1,000 things to do, it's so hard to find the thing to do in Tampa because there are so much happening here. That somehow you guys are grabbing all of these transient people, you are connecting because of the work you're doing outside of the church, I believe.
Yeah.
And God's blessing that. And the return is that the ministry of the church is actually growing and even being, fastest growing church in America, third fastest growing church in America last year. I mean,
that's what I heard. Someone had to call me to tell me about it. I didn't know. Seriously.
You're too busy growing the church.
Yeah, I said, really? Yeah, I mean, I knew about this magazine, did it, but keeping up. But, back to your point, I think when you stretch, what we've seen happen is when you start directing back to the community, all of a sudden people within your congregation get a vision for what they're called to do in the community. And if it lines up with our mission, we've empowered them to go and do it. There's some amazing people in our church that lead different community outreaches, and it's pretty cool. I mean, they're part of a nonprofit, and now we have people that go volunteer and help them. Even when the Dream Center, that was going to be a big financial thing. When we mentioned it, I'm like, God, how are we going to do this? Because we're getting ready to go multi-site, and God just had people just start, writing checks to something to like that, And it's God always meets the need, He really does. It is scary though in the moment. There's no doubt.
There's also something that I think is super important to say, and you might not be happy that I'm going to say this. We could just call this whole podcast Lessons I've Learned from Pastor Craig. But
there you go. That's a title.
There's something to be said for the fact that I watched you pass a lot of opportunities to add more campuses, to grow faster, to be more aggressive. And we have a lot of other churches in America that are – They'll pop up a location without the right infrastructure. Yeah. They'll pop up without the right support. And it's not that healthy.
Yeah.
And I've seen you pass up super good opportunities. I've seen you at the edge of a contract pull the plug on properties. I've seen you. Meanwhile, you're spending tons of money and resources on outreach.
Yeah.
So I think even in our personal lives, as leaders, as people, as Christians, as men, we're often tempted to pull back our outreach to expand our fortresses.
Yeah. Mm.
And instead, I've watched you over and over again wait on God on expansion while being faithful to the calling of the outreach. Yeah.
There's tension for both of those. There really is. But, our goal has always been out of our budget, 10% goes into mission. So whether it's local or international missions or benevolence, we've been able to focus at least 10% of our funding that goes towards missions and above sometimes, depending on the season that we're in. So, and God just seems to always be faithful, because God does want us. When you mentioned, it's so easy, again, 30 years for churches to turn inward, and we have our issues. It's fighting that inward pull, but to keep thinking outside, because what's outside is there's a lot of hurting things going on, and they may have never stepped foot in a church, but if we can start by serving them, at least you're giving them a a little bit of a representation. What's Jesus say? They will see your good works and glorify my Father in heaven. Mm-hmm. And that's what we should do. All the glory goes to God, too. Yeah. We don't look what we're doing. It's like, no, when they see us doing these good works, hopefully that gives them a reflection that God cares for them, you know.
This podcast is powered by Verse Creative. Verse is an award-winning, full-service creative agency and production studio trusted by global brands and organizations. Verse specializes in nonprofit organizations who are serious about their mission and maximizing their resources. Find out how Verse can serve your organization today at versecreative.com.
You know, I've also seen, again, another lesson we've learned from Pastor Craig here. You've allowed members, congregation, leaders, if they had a vision or an idea,
yeah,
to run with it, empowering them, go. Where a lot of times I've seen that I like either stop it or like, no, bring it in. If our church logo and name's not slapped on it, it's no good. And it was refreshing to see the security in your leadership to like, no, go. Empower. Tell us about that tension, because it's a risk. Yeah. It's a risk, right? Because you're sending human resources, actual resources. What's your mentality? What goes
people
through your head?
People who don't have a bunch of success leading nonprofits.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's just, you don't want to be the lid, right? The church can create the red tape. You want to maximize ministry, and sometimes things got to get going, and then when they kind of get a little bit messy, they'll come to us, and we can maybe help them tweak their nonprofit, their outreach ministry. But for instance, I'm not promoting them, but New Life Warehouse started by a member. Our name's not on it. Mm-hmm. It's not anything. No one would know New Life. We're involved with them. But, you know, they share warehouse space with us. We have like 70% of their volunteers come from Grace Family Church. Mm-hmm. But we don't call it Grace Family Church New Life because it's their vision and ministry. But they're part of Grace. And we just love to see people, God birth a vision in them that's an extension of the church. You know, I mean, that's exciting. I believe the church is the hope of the world, but from the church should be these extensions, like spokes on a wheel that go and touch, you know, different types of people in our Tampa Bay area. So
we talk a lot about what a healthy church looks like, and I think spawning community outreach and nonprofits from your congregation is a great. I'm not saying that it's the only.
Right.
But I mean, what a great testament. I mean, there's probably dozens I can think of right now that are in the Tampa Bay area that have come from people who've been pastored and ministered in one way or another at Grace.
Yeah.
And are now leading and running these organizations, whether it's full-time and they're big or small part-time organizations. But they're making our community better.
Yeah.
I think it's such a cool way to kind of measure. If you are doing nonprofit work and you don't see fruit like that coming from your organization, it's definitely a good gut check.
Yeah. And I think, though, to be fair, I mean, we're 30 years old. I think the first five or 10 years, we were more focused on, you know, getting our own thing started, which, you know, is kind of self-centered, you know. But as you go on, you realize, man, these people need to get out and do something. I remember a weekend where we said, you know, we're going to do that Random Acts of Kindness book that came out. Mm-hmm. Well, one weekend we told everyone, you're going to show up at the church and we're going to do something we've never done before. And we did this thing where we had a 5-minute service and said, all right, go. Go and serve the world. And we had a little sheet of paper of 10 things they could do. And so literally we had like a 5-minute service.
That's so
and people
cool.
went, no, I want to sing and you give me the word. No, we're going to go out. So got some people mad, but that's how, you know, we wanted to change things up, you know, because again, we all become inward.
No, I love that. And I said OG earlier only because original gangster of Tampa here. He's been doing some innovative, radical things in Tampa from youth pastor days to we may have an extra like director's cut podcast on just all the craziness.
Yeah. And lots of trouble I got into.
The kids you've lost and trips and all the stories. Yeah. Tell me about, I was going to ask you about just the multiplication piece of this for the leader listening. You know, they're thinking they're in the four walls and they're figuring this out. Grace has expanded outright. It's 14,000 plus people, butts and seats. Not mentioning the online influence because that will double.
Does that count? I'm kidding you.
We've always had that conversation. Yes, online people are. If you're listening to this, you're real. You're very real. Pastor Craig may not think so, but we love you.
As a non-live show, you're very real to us.
Yes, you're very real to us. 8 locations, and that expansion occurred. Did you, when you started back in 30 years ago, Did you foresee that, that expansion, that multiplication?
I mean, I really didn't. I knew that, you know, after a while, God was doing more than what we realized. And so I had to step up my leadership game. And I think that it starts with, and I'll just say this, I, when I do go sometimes to a pastor's conference and I speak at some of these workshops, it starts with you. If you're an insecure leader, you're never going to allow other people to take the vision because you, you want it to be all about you. You got to control it. Everything's got to come through me. And I learned early on, man, I don't, I'm not enough. I mean, I'm only one part of the puzzle. You know, we need to build dream teams. You know, we can't have that, what I call King Saul mentality. You know, he had David coming up through the ranks, this great warrior. And instead of encouraging him, he was jealous of him and became insecure. And you know, there's so many pastors that lose their Davids because they don't allow them to flex their muscles within the church. And so that's one thing early on when you're talking about expansion, your own leadership capacities expand first. You got to be okay with who you are and get smarter people around you. Listen, I'm telling you, I got a lot smarter people around me that are stronger than me. They in certain lanes that I'm weak in, that's where they're strong. And let them be empowered and let them get the credit. You know, I say this, there's a lot of pastors, a lot of big egos, and that, it's hard to grow a ministry like that, to me, a healthy one. So so it starts there. If you want to expand, you got to expand your own leadership capacity. Yeah.
And we know that, you know, Verse gets to serve and honor to serve Grace, and we tried slapping Craig's photo on everything, and he just keeps coming back saying, Photoshop it more. Please Photoshop it.
Yes, exactly. You've seen this face. You got to work on it.
We talk about finding good leaders, you know, and starting these initiatives. What are you looking for people? What are maybe some of the counterintuitive things that people think someone wants in a leader that you're like, no, maybe leave that behind? And what are the things that you're like, this is really, I know I've found a quality leader to put in?
I don't know. I'd say one trait, are they teachable? Mm-hmm. You know, I'd start there. Are they humble? Are they teachable? But is there a little risk factor in them that they like to kind of, you know, get out there a little bit? Are they solution oriented? Do they see the solution, or do they always, anybody can tell you the problem. We got too many people diagnosing things. No, come to me with a solution. So I look at those really just starts with, are they teachable? You know, have they been faithful in a few things, like First Timothy? Give them a few things. Are they faithful in a few things? And maybe you can give them more to do. It's still a moving target. Sometimes we haven't hit it right every time, but if they see a secure leader, they want to come alongside someone who is secure, who's not threatened. When they feel that, when a leader feels threatened, he's never going to grow strong leaders. They're going to leave. People don't like serving insecure leaders. So again, it starts with the leader, but then identifying new leaders. Those are some of the traits I think about. Obviously, the traits that attract us are like, you know, man, they're charismatic and they're attractional, and that's great. But if they don't have these other foundational things, those kind of people can, I cannot work good sometimes. So you just kind of look for someone who's teachable, who asks good questions, who will follow through with assignments. You know, they always say real estate is location, location, location. To me, leadership is follow up. Do they follow up and do the little things they're supposed to do? And that's how you, to me, grow, you know, some good leadership.
That's huge.
I mean, you got to let them swing the bat, too. I mean, that's the thing. You have to – people are going to fail. I mean, talking about failures, as a youth pastor, that was my training ground. People got to be willing to swing the bat. And when they miss, if you're a good leader, you know, you go back and you have conversations like Jesus did. Okay, let's talk about what happened here. You know, it's a process of learning and growing as a leader.
Pastor Craig, talk to us on the early years, like you said earlier, different focus, not self-centered, but I think it's a focused. You have to grow this. You have to figure out who we are. What are we doing? It's a startup mentality, right? As you've developed, you've delegated, kind of galvanized, you've allowed others to be the face, to be the name, to be the spokesperson, to a fault almost, that you walk around sometimes at locations and thousands of people that, you know, new folks eventually will know that, are you the founder? Are you that guy? You're the, but they may not even know.
Right.
How was that transition? Because that's not standard, you know, practice, if you may.
Well, now everybody's in a different season. I think when you're first starting something, it needs to be your imprint, your DNA. You're injecting your DNA into that church early on. But I wish one thing I would have done earlier in my ministry is have more of a shared model, even from the teaching. I was doing most of the teaching the first 20 years, 45 weekends a year. And that was a little bit of a grind. And, you know, but for me, the season I'm in now, I love. I must decrease, they must increase. I love the season to see other people win. And I think our church is healthier than it's ever been because of the more of a shared leadership where it's not built on a personality. It really isn't. Now I have a team of two or three of us that, you know, that do the teaching, and it's such diversity in that it's been very healthy for the church. So for me, the season I'm in, I want to do that, but I really think it's a model other guys should look at, because if you're the only one and you're hit by a truck tomorrow, where's the ministry? Where's the church at? You know, I'll be honest, if I'm hit by a truck tomorrow, I think we're going to be okay. So I don't want to get by a truck, but if I am.
I'm such a chance.
Well, we could probably count a lot more really large churches that have suffered and struggled when that single leader has gone down.
Yeah.
Whether it is hit by a truck or a moral failure or anything. There's not that many that are doing this model. And I imagine that it took a lot of risk for you to embrace it and stick with it. Because I know I'm not the only one who has heard multiple times where people say, I love your preaching. Can you just preach all the time? I would be, you know. And I'm this not to say I love all the all the people who are preaching right now, but
who's your favorite though?
I'm kidding. But you've had to deal with that. You had to hear that probably week after week for a long time and stick with that conviction.
Yeah, and it's still a little muddy. I mean, a shared model is still pretty challenging, and for us, we're working through some of the finer details of that. But I really believe that it's a good protection for the long-term success of the church if it's not dependent on one person.
Yeah.
But when you have three or four or five people in a high-level role and they're leading together, obviously you need to have a tiebreaker, but it's not easy. But for me, it's a better way for us to do it.
You're saying it's worth it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So for those churches or nonprofit organizations who might be kind of in that middle space there, maybe they were relying heavily on that leadership personality, but they're realizing, hey, how do they do that? How do they manage that? What are they, you know, what are the, is that something that you're saying, like, try to get out of that to, you know, the multiplicity early on? Like, how do they manage
that? I mean, number one, you got to know that God's calling you to do it. I'm not saying it's for everybody. And then you got to be very intentional about it. I mean, very intentional. Obviously, I'm 65. So this next level of leadership I'm looking at had to be people younger, right? You're looking for that, some of them, not all, but a younger group that has proven themselves at some level to say, okay, let's see if this can be the group. And that's really where a lot of my time and investment is at right now, just helping them understand how I think and talking about it and letting them lead. I mean, really, 85% of our church right now is not led by me. I mean, there are decisions made, and it's hard because I have preferences, and I've realized my preferences don't matter. Now, core values are different, so I'm learning the difference between a preference and a core value. That's great. I mean, most leaders are very much high D control people, and there's a lot you have to surrender. I can tell you, I'm still going through it, but I feel like I'm in our church in a much better place now. I don't feel as much stress. I think that until you allow people to make decisions, you know, you don't know if they have what it takes. And and so it's challenging, but it's very rewarding for me. You know?
Yeah, I imagine one of the probably most difficult parts of that is just time, is being willing and being able to make the time to spend with those people. Because you can send them video courses, you can, but like there's nothing to replace actual time with them to develop them. And
yeah, I think the crock pot idea is the best, because I think when there are transitions of large churches, it's almost so quick of a handoff because they really weren't thinking about it. So then they just think they can do it in 12 months.
Yeah.
I'm here, now I'm not here, and this guy is the... And like, man, it that can be very difficult. So ours has been a pretty much a 6-7 year process, and just slowly shaping. And, and again, there's a lot of rumors that come out. You know, Craig's leaving. You know, when I start allowing other people to speak, and I'm never going to leave. My role might be redefined, but I don't plan on leaving. You know?
The rumor I heard is that you're going to go play for the Bucks or something. Is that
right? That was years ago. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I was telling Colin that earlier. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about your Buck? You're a big fan, of course. Tell us a little bit about your Buck.
You're taking a right turn here. Gee. Let's see. That was years ago. I mean, you know, I always loved football and dreamed to play for the Buccaneers. I'd gotten saved, and I go, this is what God's going to do. He's going to use this platform to play for the Bucks. And they had a terrible field goal kicker at the time, so I had been training as a field goal kicker, and I eventually got a tryout. But when I got into the room, actually, for the application, it was pretty funny. Was John McKay was in there. This is back in 1978, something like that.
Some bright orange jerseys back then.
Orange jerseys, that's right. And they said, hey, you're not even old enough to play in the NFL. So all that. And so I didn't even get to go on the field. But officially, I had been invited for a tryout. And they wanted me to go play semi-pro football, which – wasn't going to work because you don't just field goal kick. You got to play another position, and these guys are way too big. And so that was the end of my football career, but that was the beginning of God really showing me what he wanted me to do. That's why I tell people, your dream may not be God's dream, but your dead end is not a dead end for God. You know?
Well, how often do you think people do that? Well, they've got this direction, and they follow that, and all of a sudden God takes that, you know, H is good at that, but takes that right turn.
Yeah.
You know, how does that, I feel like that probably happens a lot.
I think it does happen a lot. I mean, as long as we're moving, God can direct us. But when you're standing still, not taking chances and not taking risk, what can God do? And you're sitting there, you know, waiting. I mean, I think we take steps and then God can direct us.
It's great.
I love what you said earlier. I want to go back to the preferences over values and the discernment of that. Because I think many times we'll make a big deal out of a preference, something actually that it's not a core value. And how do you hear from God, discernment? How do you process? Who do you listen to?
I can tell you the last 7 years have been great, but it's been frustrating for me. Preferences, I got to let go of my preferences. Why are they doing it that way? Well, as long as we have the same outcome, what do I care? And it's still a struggle to this day. So I don't think that ever gets easy for any type D leader. But man, I'd rather see, you know, I'd rather empower 10 people to do something that's going to multiply itself. And maybe they're doing it 85% the way I think it should be done. But then instead of me, one person doing it, you know, it just makes sense, right? There's a multiplication factor when you empower others to begin leading, and they're going to do things differently, you know?
You have an example of one that's been hard for you?
Hmm.
It might encourage somebody else who's maybe in that same seat.
Wow. I mean, I can think of a lot of examples. It's just...
Which one can you say?
I mean, you know, I was a youth pastor for years. I've had to let go of youth ministry and even how we do summer camps. Still, I can tell you five things I would do differently.
Wow.
And I've just had to pull out and go, okay, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. And they're mostly preferences. You know, I would have done it this way or done it that way. Now, I will still get in the weeds sometimes. That would be one area that I would say, you know, there's some multiple things that I could go into, but you know, you just got to grow up, you know, you do, man. I realize, listen, you find out how much ego you have and pride when you finally start surrendering.
And it's difficult because you were successful at it.
Yeah.
So therefore the track record's there. Why wouldn't we do it?
Right.
How much of it is it like parenting, right? You have to let, sometimes you can teach your kids, you can show your kids, but you got to let your kids do it.
Very good. That's right, a great analogy.
Their own way.
Yeah.
and they'll come back. I'm like, thanks dad. Or like, you're right, Dad, or see, Dad, it worked the same way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a grandfather now, so you know.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
You've gone through it. Well, grandparents don't get to do that. They just get to, like, who cares?
So you get to kind of, like, you know, you're just the fun one.
I think every leader, I mean, another thing I'll say about leadership in general, I mean, do you really have people that have permission to speak to you about your blind spots? I mean, they say, oh, yeah, I have people. No, the feedback they give you is what you want to hear because they're afraid they're going to get fired. You know, and so that feedback culture is hard to develop in any nonprofit organization. But I promise you, we have blind spots. I have blind spots. My wife's really good at telling me those, which, you know, is hard sometimes coming from your spouse. But I would say in leadership, you got to make sure you have people that can come to your, that you know are in your corner that will tell you the truth. You know, what they say, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. Too many strong, dominant CEOs and pastors of churches, they have, you know, they're not as open as you would think, you know, to feedback. And we just got to let go of some of that.
Yeah,
it's good. Pastor Craig, one of the questions that comes in all the time, and it's become a recurring theme because it's been helpful to mm-hmm. our listeners, is on fundraising, mm-hmm. right? And for nonprofits, the idea of developing donors, engaging, activating them, engaging them, building relationships. 30 years plus, including, and plus if you add youth group years yeah. and beyond, give us some insight. How have yeah. you done it? What's God done, but through your leadership, through yeah. the team, et cetera?
It's funny. I've never been to Bible school, but I heard that's one thing all these guys wish Bible school would have taught them about fundraising, because really what stops vision is lack of leadership and lack of funding, right? Mm. And it's the hardest thing to do. I mean, money is such a sensitive subject. We all know it is. You know, talk about my mother, but don't talk, or pilot, but don't talk about money. And early on, it was hard. I mean, I remember doing my first tithing message and apologizing the whole time through it. And one of my biggest donors came to me and said, "Do you believe in what you're preaching?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "You better act like, or I'm going to stop giving, because wow. you're passionate about everything else, but you're apologizing about." Mm. I went, "Oh, okay."
Yeah.
So, you know, and fundraising. You know, first of all, you have to really believe in what you're doing, and then you're giving people the why, right? People give the vision, right? They give to a vision. And so you got to make the vision compelling, and you have to be unapologetic, not brash, but unapologetic about this is, I'm excited, and you need to see this is so important for us to do as a church or whatever your organization is. And I tell you what, when you're dealing with large donors, you better have your facts. You better have your due diligence done, what the costs are, what we're going to do. If it's a building, here's what it's going to cost. Here's the size. Here's where we're at right now. They want to know the facts, you know. So there are some things I've learned over the years.
And what if you don't have that? What if you have the vision and you believe in the vision and it's something that's deep in your heart, but you don't necessarily have all, is that like a no-go, or is that like,
for the business type people, they want to see something on paper. You know, you got to get someone to help you articulate what's in your head on paper, right? I mean, you have to. They want to see that you've taken time to write it down. Mm. You know, that's what I've learned over the years. And again, here's what I do know too, and it's different from a church, from certain nonprofits in some ways, because in people in church, there's a lot of people that have a lot of money that if you don't know how to make the ask, they're going to give it somewhere, you know? And I know that that for us, we're going to make sure the vision is compelling and you're building relationship. For me, part of my job is building relationship with donors. They want to know you. They want to, you know, and that helps as you're building those bridges to them so then when you have a need, you're not starting this brand new, "Hey, I don't know you, but would you like to," you know, they get to know you, they get to know the vision.
That makes up for a lot too. If you have that genuine relationship, I think people might be willing to overlook some things because they've already built that trust with you.
Right.
So maybe they're not needing all of that because they know who you are.
Exactly. Advantage for me, 30 years, you know, we have a little bit of a track record, but mm-hmm. but raising funds makes most pastors very very nervous and uncomfortable. It's an uncomfortable place to be. It seems self-serving. Even when I get up and do a series every year on finances, and it seems like it's self-serving. But we know when they invest and give, it's not just helping us. It's helping other ministries that we support. No one sees the inside of what's really going on in your organization. That's why you got to give them the inside behind the scenes. You got to give them the stories, the testimonies of what's going on.
You do a great job, even when you talk about money, about breaking down finances mm-hmm. for the organization.
Right.
So you will oftentimes give a very accurate report of where all the money is going when you're talking about
it. Yeah, we give them like a pie shape. And, you know, they don't realize, you know, really, your utility bill is $130,000 a year or whatever it is. They have no idea when you've got seven or eight campuses. It's can you imagine having seven houses and maintaining all those houses? Mm-hmm. And some of those things. It helps them to see that. A lot of people like to hear that. Other people are anti-big church. "Oh, see that? You got too much money in the building." So
Those people are not able to do a cost per person analysis then, are they?
Yeah, right. No, I hear you. Yeah.
How about that church running $3 million budget for 300 people?
It's funny. But, you know, it's something that the Bible's true. I think when people understand the principles of giving, it helps them, because I believe God blesses you when you become generous in your giving and in your life. In fact, the funny thing is for me, the last two or three times I've gone to speak, and I don't go do a lot of outside speaking, but the last two or three guys, what do you want me to speak on? All three of them said, I want you to speak on giving. They've gone back to some of the, it's hard for, but I can say things they can't say at their church.
Yeah.
And I've had phenomenal results too. It's funny, some of the phone calls I get. So it's pretty funny.
Guys, if you want to book Pastor Craig, we're going to put his email right here at the podcast.
I imagine you can say things there that you can't say at your church either. Yeah. So maybe there's a little bit of an outlet.
That's true.
Yeah. If you don't want Viagra mentioned though.
Wow.
Yeah. There's an additional, you got to put that in the contract.
But you know what? I think
big funding move though.
But I think giving, you got to be straightforward with people, compassionate. Yeah. But here's the deal. Yeah. Here's what the Bible says. And the word is weighty enough on it. We don't need to beat people up on it. But the word says enough.
Yeah.
So
I love that. Not apologizing. Just starting with it. Not apologizing for it. Yeah.
That's the hardest part of leadership, though, like you said about fundraising. It is hard.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that story you shared, because you probably in that moment, by apologizing, you thought you were opening the door wider. But you were closing it.
Yeah.
You were closing the door, and there were people that were saying, I'm not.
Yeah.
That's communicating. This person does not believe in what they're doing.
Exactly.
That's the last
thing. That was a big lesson I learned early on.
That's cool.
Absolutely.
It's huge.
Talk to the leader looking to start a church, start a nonprofit. What are some questions you're asking? Are you encouraging them, discouraging them? Are they out of their mind? Or are they what would you tell them?
Number one, know God's called you to do it because you're going to go through some challenging times early on. If you know God's told you to do it, that's a stake in the ground. Have some good advisors around you. I mean, early on, have people around you at every level helping you. I mean, write the vision down. You know, what are the two or three things that you would say the whys of why you do it, right? Here's why we're doing this. And here's what we think the outcomes will be. And keep it very simple. I just think that whether it's a church or a nonprofit, we can get so scattered, laser focus on what the main thing is and stay on the main thing. Keep it the main thing. As our church grew, everybody wanted us to get involved with their projects. We had to know, is that God wants to do that? You got to stay focused on the main thing.
Man, that's gold right there.
That's great.
That's gold.
It's amazing.
I think that's a clip. I think that's a promo clip That and the Viagra thing. That and the Viagra.
Yeah. You're still doing that today, though. Like, you're still putting people around you. You're still questioning.
Yeah,
you're
all
still
the time.
Listening.
Yeah. Yeah. I have some people on our board that are very smart that have built businesses. And in fact, one of our guys built a business. It was kind of like a multi-site. He was in the food business, but he bought up and acquired like 18 others over the nation. Then he sold the company. But I said, hey, I'm starting this multi-site. How do I? And he really helped us understand how to build. There's certain principles that are transferable, right?
Totally.
Oh, you got to always be learning, man. I mean.
That's great.
Yeah. I could talk about five things never to do if you want to.
We could do that one too.
I mean, you know, we're talking about, there was so many, 10 things I always said if I ever wrote a book, it'd be 10 things not to do as a leader, you know. And
We can remove this if we need to. I'm curious. A lot of years of speaking. What's one of the most regrettable or embarrassing things you've ever said from a stage?
Oh, wow.
Other than Viagra.
Yeah, that was...
That might not even be there yet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, over the years, I'm trying to think.
Too many to sift through?
I have a lot of foupas in there. I'm just trying to think of...
We'll do a podcast with Debbie. I'm sure she can share.
She's got
in detail.
All. She's got
I remember one time I was talking about. Jonah, and the whole thing was about Jonah. I said no the whole time. I kept
knowing
and people were waving at me, trying. And at the end, they go, "You started with the book of Jonah, and you talked about Noah the whole. You used the name Noah instead of Jonah." And I'm like, "All that." And then my son, who never commented on any of my messages. He was like 10 years old, said, Dad, that was really funny what happened. I said, what? Because I said, it was a new year, and I said, hey, we all need a fresh start. Well, I said, we all need a fresh fart. And that's the only
thing.
Which
is equally true, I think, sometimes. You know, sometimes you just gotta...
That's the only thing he ever heard. Yeah.
Awesome.
And then I was doing a wedding one time. I remember saying, marriage is not an option instead of divorce is not an option. Yeah. And then the funeral, my very first funeral I did, and some of you might have, very first funeral I ever did. I was in my new church trying to impress people. I wasn't a youth pastor anymore. I'm a pastor. And we're going from the church to the gravesite. And I was in the car with a friend of mine. Hey, you want to drive with me to the graveside? As we started talking, I forgot where I was at. And you know how you get a long line of cars with the lights on? I was in the back, and I said, why are these people driving so slow? They're in the right lane, so I zoom around them. I'm flooring it, going past them in the left lane. And I pass everybody, including the hearse. And the hearse guy looked at me like, what are you doing? And then I eased back in. The problem was having to get to the cemetery, and all those people knew that I had just done that. Like, who is this idiot pastor?
Yeah.
And I had to close out, you know, dust to dust, and I thought I was dust to dust, you know, my last time as a pastor.
You just climbed in the casket.
Oh, like, man. I wanted to bury myself. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I can't think of some sermon ones, but there are definitely a few of them out there.
Some of your humility came, honestly. You really heard.
Oh, yeah.
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 Did you ever lead worship?
You know, that's not true, but they have mic'd me before. One time we had we used to do a Christmas thing where just fun things, we'd have fun, and this one were a lot smaller. And one of the things they decided to do was they had me mic'd up when I was singing and they had it set up for the Christmas banquet. And they go, now we're going to hear from Pastor Craig and his version of whatever it was. And it was just me singing.
And you didn't know that they were recording it?
And it was terrible. And I was the only time I said, you got to turn that off right now. It was that bad. It made me never want to sing again in church. I can tell you that.
That's a preference, Pastor. Yeah. That's a preference.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. Tell us, before we wrap, and if you have any final thoughts, again, thank you for the time. Give us a little insight. Can you leak anything? We're celebrating 30 years. What's up? What's ahead? What's next?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, our 30-year anniversary is coming up, and we thought we should do something big, and then we shifted and said, no, we're going to do a 30-year anniversary, but it's not going to be about us. We're going to really do it on Easter at the stadium, Raymond James Stadium.
Nice.
Because we think we can reach thousands of people who would not normally come to church on Easter to a neutral site. Yeah. So we're kind of really fired up about that.
Awesome.
Getting ready to plan for that. And it's going to be an invitation for Tampa Bay to come to Easter to hear about the greatest comeback ever.
Let's go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So it should be good.
If you're listening, you're invited. Awesome. And if you missed it,
Easter Sunday,
watch it online.
That'll be Easter Sunday. Yeah.
Are you going to finally get your kick?
Yeah, I might do a kick.
Your
goal. One field goal.
One
field goal? No, I'd pull a groin or something, probably. But I would say that if I could summarize one thing about leadership is I'm a very serious leader, but don't take yourself too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just can't come off unapproachable, overly religious. Keep it real. Authenticity is so important. Humility, admitting when you're wrong, you know, hey, I screwed up. You gain more respect from your leaders when you can admit you've done something wrong. That's probably the biggest complaint I hear is they never admit that they're wrong. And I think admitting you're wrong is not a weakness. It's actually a strength, you know. So don't take yourself too seriously. I like just having fun.
That's good. You've modeled that well, Pastor Craig.
Yeah.
You have. Yeah. Thank you for the time. Thank you for the principles. And be sure to follow Pastor Craig. Follow GFC Florida online. And
I have all those links for you.
All that Grace is doing. So take us out.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Like, subscribe, share, and we'll see you next time on the Nonprofit Renaissance.
Thanks again for listening to the Nonprofit Renaissance. We hope it ignites a renaissance in you and helps you go further and grow faster. Be sure to share, rate, and subscribe. And if you'd like to recommend or be a guest on our show, send us an email at podcast@versecreative.com.